If your small business has a problem, you could say,
"Ugh, just my luck."
But you should say,
"Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there."
And we'll help get you back in business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
It's the Eye on the Illini podcast, brought to you by IlliniGuys.com. In this episode, a roundtable discussion featuring Illini Guys Director of Recruiting, Kedrick Prince, Illini Guys basketball writer, Connor Kegley, and Illini Guys co-founders, Larry Smith and Mike Kegley. Now, here's your host, Mike Kegley.
Tonight, we're talking about the Blue Bloods. What is up this college basketball season with the Blue Bloods? The preface of this was we were taking a look at the rankings last year, and depending on what service you looked at, we had Kentucky in first place, Duke in second place, North Carolina third, Auburn and Arizona fourth and fifth. But if you take a look at the top three teams, Kentucky, Duke, and North Carolina, 12 of the top 36 players committed went to those teams. And we're looking at three teams that are having years that certainly don't match what you would expect from a class full of blue chippers. So our question is, you know, what's going on out there this year? And what do you think is causing some of this? Kedrick, you know, you're obviously the director of recruiting. You talk to recruits from all over the country. You have a very unique perspective on this. What are your thoughts?
I really think a lot of it is the age, and I think the one and done has really hurt the Blue Bloods and I guess the top programs. You know, it's been a great run, I guess, for over the years. But I really and truly think now when you look at, everybody's talked about how good the Big Ten is and how good the Big 12 is. The Big Ten is old. I mean, you know, everybody knows that, you know, Wisconsin is one of the oldest basketball teams in the history of college basketball. They have a number of guys that are 22, 23, 4 years old. Illinois is older now. I mean, Iowa is a junior in college. He's been there 3 years. You got a senior, Damonte Williams and Trent Frazier. These are guys that's been around. You know, Georgia, Rashawn Ability, he's been there a long time. You look at Michigan, Isaiah Livers, he's a senior and he is playing as good as basketball as anybody. So to me, when you look at the, you know, the veterans of college basketball compared to the youth, and sometimes, you know, I hate to say this, but some of these kids didn't pan out either. You know, so it's not always just the age. You know, you can miss on kids. I mean, there's some kids who are supposed to be the next coming and then they don't pan out. So it's a combination of all of it. But I really think the biggest thing, if I had to say, I really think it's the youth and some of the older kids decide to stay back in the college to make college basketball rich. Because think about it, the Big Ten is just really, really, it's healthy. There's not a lot of young teams. You know, you look at Michigan State, they lost everybody and they're young and they're struggling. So that's probably the biggest thing for me, and also missing on some of these kids.
Yep. Okay. Larry, I know that you've had an opinion on this for a long time, and as friends, we've talked about it over pizza at places like Jupiter's and Monocle's and Papa Del's. What are your thoughts on this subject?
Yeah, I agree with Kedrick 100%. And there are a couple of components to this. One is ESPN. Here are those three schools, and those are the three schools on ESPN the most. Number two goes with number one, is that these kids walk on campus saying, I'm only going to be here for a year. So regardless of what happens, I'm not going to be here for a sophomore year. So you get a case like in Duke with the kid who has the big game, the 24-16, the Johnson kid against Pitt, but then he goes back later and only gets 8 minutes in a game against, I think it was NC State. And Mike Krzyzewski, a Hall of Fame coach, and he's got, you know, as many rings as fingers, says, yeah, the physicality just didn't work out for him. So the kid, instead of fighting his way through, he leaves. He quits the team. Now, if I'm an NBA GM, you've got a history of leaving high schools. You left IMG earlier senior year. Now you leave Duke early. You weren't even part of the top 60 draft prospects anyway. Where are you going? But that's a lot of the problem is that, to Kedrick's point, you're not going to go to a team where you have to go in and fit into a system and learn your way in and become that All-American by the time you're a junior. You're not going to waste that kind of time. You're not going to take that kind of time, because it's not about the team. It's about you, and it's about getting your marketing dollars up. You know, people have talked about that, you know, Zion should have quit, Zion Williamson, when he had his injury with Duke. And my argument was, here's the thing. You go to one of those schools, your marketing dollars go up. And that's the issue with the G League as they get going, which is a great idea, by the way. And I don't mean to take up all this time, but my wife didn't know who Zion Williamson was when he stepped on the Duke campus. By the time he left, she knew who Zion Williamson was. Guess who buys the jerseys for my teenage son? Guess who buys the t-shirts? And so that's part of the issue as well. You've got these schools that are geared right now. They've got four or five openings every year. They're going to come in and show you all the banners. And that's where these kids are going to go. And the chickens have come home to roost this year because of COVID. You couldn't work these kids to get them into shape. And it's just a bunch of kids playing like a very loosely fit together AAU team sometimes.
You know what's tough is that, like, I remember there was an interview, I don't know if you guys saw it, about 3 or 4 years ago, where Calipari just said it. I recruit kids that are one and done. If they're not one and done, they can't come here. So if you think about it, he's telling these recruits and parents and all these coaches, I'm recruiting potential athletes. Here's an example. DJ Carton was a 4- or 5-star kid who ended up going to Ohio State but transferred to Marquette. I work in the school system, and he was the same school that I worked in. So he asked me, hey, I really want to go to Kentucky. So I called. I called Kentucky. They didn't want anything to do with him. They wouldn't return my call. Then the one phone call I got back, he's not a one and done, so we're not interested in him. So that's part of it, you know. And now it's bit him a little bit because they're one and done, because there's not a kid on those. I mean, they can potentially be draft picks, but you're missing out. And you talk about, you know, Larry was talking about a system. When Brad Underwood first got hired, he talked about kids learning his style, his system. Look at what we're just talking about. Io's in his third year. You got Carbello and you have Coleman Hawkins. You never heard anything about a system this year because he had veteran guys that stayed around that taught it to the other kids. For the first 2 years he was there, that's all we talked. We heard him say. That's why it's good for these kids to stay in the program like Illinois or even Iowa. Fran has a remarkable system. The kids know what to expect. He gives them freedom. To be honest with you, Illinois fans probably don't want to hear this, but Fran really wanted Luke Goody. Really, really bad. Luke Goody was a kid that he's an Iowa type kid. He really is. So that system that these teams have, when they get older, they become better.
Connor, do you have any thoughts on that?
I really like what you said, Larry, kind of about, you know, the Zion Williamson type situation where he's going to be kind of elevated by the Duke situation because he has the talent that is just everybody wants you. He's going to excel regardless of where he goes. So him maximizing ability to put himself on the biggest platform is going to be very important for him. But there really aren't that many Zion Williamsons is the issue for these teams, because that's going to work for guys that have ridiculous amounts of talent. But how are you getting the guy that is going to be the next tier player? How are you going to get them to play 2 to 3 years while working within your system to expand on their game and to really win as a team? I'd say that's where they're not really excelling right now, because they're not getting the kids to buy in that maybe you're not a Zion Williams.
You're exactly right, Cotter. And to your point, you know, I did a podcast, an Eye on the Illini with Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News, someone I've had a pleasure knowing for more than 20 years. And he said the same exact thing. He said, these kids walk on campus thinking they're John Wall, and they're not. And that's part of the problem, is that they're looking already to the dollars. I've joked about the Kentucky kids. I'm like, I think they've spent more time on hoops hype than they do in their own playbook. Because these are kids right now that just now, as we're in the end of the season, just now beginning to play like a team and actually execute some plays. But I watched them even 2 weeks ago. And no, there's no, everyone want to be the alpha. Nobody knew how to play a secondary role or pick for somebody else. I mean, they're a terrible shooting team. They don't pass the ball very well. They don't find the open man. I mean, these are basic fundamentals. So how are you going to be a lottery pick to go help a team on the next level if you can't do the simple things here for a coach like John Calipari. So I agree with you. That's part of the problem, is that the kids already in their minds think they are the next X, and they're just going to walk into that and don't understand the work it takes. You know, a few years ago, we had a second round pick in Malcolm Brogdon win NBA Rookie of the Year. I mean, to say that sentence is blasphemous. You know, how in the world could, you know, anybody miss? It's to a point now, honestly, for me, the NBA draft, I didn't watch until the 13th or 14th pick, because none of these kids picked in the first 12, 13 spots are going to do anything. I don't know who they are. They're not going to make this team better initially. And these kids, if by the time they do figure it out, they're going to go to the max dollar somewhere else anyway. There's never been a one-and-done player who has led his team that drafted him to an NBA championship. The closest would be Kevin Durant with the Thunder, who took him to the finals. And that should say something about the entire system.
I mean, there's a certain level of truth to the teams that are 1 through 12. I'd say that the guys that are usually going 1 to 3, depending on the specific class, I'd say those are the best players. Now, they're also getting drafted by the worst 3 teams, so it's going to be hard for them to elevate their teams to the, you know, NBA title, because there's just, you're not going to have the people around you that are really going to help you win.
But let me interrupt you with that, though. That's the way the system was designed back in the mid 80s when the Knicks got Patrick Ewing. The worst teams always get the first pick. So at that, Patrick Ewing was a 4-year player who made the Knicks better. Somebody just put on Twitter this week a clip of me from 1997 from This Week in the NBA on CNN. And it was hilarious. I mean, I didn't know this was out there. Somebody else found it and tweeted at me. And it was the night that they did the NBA draft lottery. And I had a comment that only 4 at that time, it's 1997. So the lottery is new by comparison, 12 years old. My lead in on the NBA show that night was only 4 of the 118 lottery picks have championship rings. So this has always been a problem, to your point. But I guess my issue is that we have too few Tim Duncans. Zion is one player that could be, but Anthony Davis went to the Pelicans. He didn't elevate them. Anyway, but that's just my thought. I don't want to cut. Go ahead and continue your thought. I just want to throw that in there.
My ultimate point is there really is, for the players that aren't Zion, so along the lines of like this Kentucky team, you know, you got Terrence Clark, you got Brandon Boston, you have, you know, Cameron Fletcher, Lance Ware, all that were pretty high level kids in terms of like where they were getting recruited at. All the scouting services had them at least top 35. How are you getting them to be better at what they do, where it's not just the fact that they're going to have the athleticism? They don't have the next level athleticism. So how do you maximize each one of these players and get the most out of them? I mean, Brandon Boston is getting hyped up by these services before coming into college basketball that he's going to be the next Brandon Ingram. And that just wasn't the case. And anybody that watched his tape kind of could see that the foot speed wasn't there. He doesn't have the elite, I'd say, hops. He doesn't have the ability to tap the rim the same way. So how is Calipari going to be elevating him with not only for the next level, but how is he going to take his game specifically and maximize it at the college level for him to get wins? And it just doesn't seem that he's put together rosters well based on their strengths going into college.
When you look at some of the draft boards, and there's tons, I looked at about 5 of them the other day. I posted a couple with IO on them. To be honest with you, a lot of these draft boards that I see now, we're used to seeing the Duke and Kentucky kids. I think Kentucky 1 year had like, you know, 6-7 kids picked in the top, you know, 15, 20. But now I see a lot of G League kids. I don't see a lot of those kids, you know, that those traditional Duke and Kentucky kids. Not as many as I have in the past. So, but I remember, like Larry was saying, you know, back in the day, it was different. If you lost, you know, you got those older kids who stayed around. Kids weren't jumping to the league as much as they are now. But Kentucky, I'm really curious to see those kids get, or even the kids at Duke, or even, you know, Kansas. So I'm really curious to see how that's going to pan out as far as the recruiting classes, because not just Kentucky, but a lot of those schools, even though Coach K didn't like it, because that was one of the things he struggled with, was the one-and-done kids, because he's an older guy as well. But he knows that's the nature of the game. I mean, because when he recruits some of these kids, now some of these kids are going to be back. If they continue to keep some of these kids, then obviously some of these kids are going to pan out and then they'll be back to where they have been, which has been on top. It's the Blue Bloods always going to get the cream of the crop. I can tell you right now, I'm talking to DJ Stewart, and talk to any recruiting guru, they will tell you, Illinois was one of the first schools that I think they were the first school to offer him a scholarship. they were his favorite school for a long, long time. And as soon as Duke came in the picture in 3 months, he was gone. They're always going to get the recruits. And I mean, I know this firsthand because the kid has told me that, but it's just hard to recruit against those programs. You got to win. And this isn't just about Illinois. You better win and you better go out and recruit. This is why I think, and I wrote a column about this, you better have some good coaches who can recruit and who can identify talent. Because if you want to stay on top, if Illinois wants to stay on top, Iowa wants to stay on top of the Big Ten where they are, and Ohio State, their coaches better recruit. Because let's face it, Michigan's going to be there. Michigan State is going to be there in Indiana if they can ever figure it out. Those teams have always been there, especially Michigan State.
Well, and I wonder, there's even a part of me that you get into the argument that recruiting fans have had forever, which is, does a kid, when you look at these rankings, does a kid move up a few places just because he commits to Kentucky, to Duke, to North Carolina? And so when I see this large amount of guys struggling maybe to have an impact as a big class, it also makes me wonder if you take, let's just take, Duke's class last year, if they were all committed to University of Illinois, would they be as highly rated? I'm not saying that these guys are going to drop out of the top 50. That's not what I'm saying. But do they drop down 5 or 10 points because Coach K did not pick them instead of the other way around?
That is a sore subject with me. I'm glad you brought that up because that is a fact. I'll give you an example. I'm going to talk football. Isaiah Williams had over 50 to 61 scholarship offers. As soon as he was a five-star recruit, the day he committed to Illinois, when the recruiting rankings came out, he went from a five-star to a four-star. I know we're talking basketball, but I'm going to tell you, I've seen that happen to so many kids. There are kids out there that I thought that went to Duke who was, okay, let's look at Adam Miller and DJ Stewart. It's a good example. Both were considered five-star recruits. Adam dropped. Why did he drop to a four-star recruit on some rankings and DJ stayed there? Those are two classic examples where it does matter. People can say, oh, it doesn't, because you can see the changes with some of these kids. Recruiting is good. It's really good for fans. And it's also a good gauge to me. And people always ask me, what's the difference between a four and a five-star? They're both great players, but I think the glaring difference is obviously the foot speed and the strength with a lot of these kids. But that wasn't the case with Adam Miller. You know, and I know when they dropped Isaiah Williams, the quarterback, his size was never an issue when he was a five-star. But then when he committed to Illinois, he's too small, so we dropped him to a four-star. So anybody tells you that they don't do that, those are two great examples that they do it.
Yeah, that's something that fans who've been out there for a long time have really debated that. Now, the other thing that I wanted to ask about, and I know this one's one that can get us into a little bit of trouble, but when you look at, Krzyzewski and Williams and maybe to a lesser extent Calipari, but is there an argument to be made that as the kids obviously are staying the same young age and these guys are aging, are they maybe a little less in touch with this generation than maybe they were 10 years ago? And is that affecting how they're coaching and dealing with these kids as they're trying to develop them? Because it certainly seems like the ratings, they're not working any harder. You know, they're not doing a bunch of three stars or four stars. So their recruiting classes are very similar. Do you think they're losing a little bit of touch with today's player?
You know what I do? I can't, speak, for the other guys, but I see like Roy Williams. I think he runs the same system. He coaches the same. Kyle Perry does the same thing. Bill Self does the same thing. I just think it goes back to the quality of kids is what I think. I don't want to say, because you can say that about a lot of coaches. You can say the same about Fran, you can say about Brad. Brad Underwood is not, 35 years old. I think when today's game is get up and down the floor, and it's got an NBA feel to it, which I really don't like. Everybody runs a high pick and roll, which is what everybody's using now. So I think those teams are still doing that. But if I had to pick one out of all those coaches who I think, I don't want to say it's passing him by, because I'll get in trouble for saying this, but I think Coach K is the one that's behind a little bit. He is so old school and outspoken. He's the one coach, because I don't see those other teams. I don't see Calipari slowing down. And even Roy Williams, I watched them when they played Iowa. They got up and down the floor. but I just don't think that's, Coach K is such a tactician. He likes to be able to X's and O's, and just, I don't think he likes it. I know he has to do it, but he will be the guy, I think, that will, who will slow down compared to the other coach. I don't know about the other guys, but that's what I think.
Yeah, I can't argue with that, Kedrick. I think part of it, too, is what we talked about earlier in terms of these kids have their agenda set up before they get their books or their first class. And I think you're seeing that with the kid with Duke. You know, we've seen it with other players in other places in recent years where if they get to a situation to where you're the coach, you're not putting me in the game, you're not playing me as much as I think, the coach doesn't have that power to bench a player to teach, to get that lesson across, to get that point across. And we saw that with this young man. This young man had no, you know, because this is going to mess up his agenda. We saw, you know, it's amazing. Khalil Whitney went from a five-star kid to Kentucky to he left the team to he is Carmen San Diego. No one knows where he is. And that's a shame because he should be on a college campus somewhere and working toward maybe being a lottery pick this year. You know, now I don't know Khalil and I'm not trying to call him out, I mean, or his family or anything like that, because I that's not my point. But my point is that you don't have that teaching tool anymore. And so, Kedrick, to your point, I think of those three, it would seem that Coach K would be possibly the least to give in to that new wave of thinking, if that makes sense.
I actually agree with you on that part. I think that Coach K is kind of going to have to be the one that's going to adapt the quickest here, because players are not going to stay with him if they don't see that early success, because he is going to drill them hard and not give them benefit of the doubt. He's going to move them to the bench and give someone else an opportunity to work through it. Well, I don't think that this class is exactly like telling, because they didn't really have as much practice time with the situation going on this year. They didn't have the cupcake schedule to start the year with the non-conference schedule. Didn't really get as much progress with the young kids. And so maybe, you know, next year he brings in, you know, 3-5 stars already, and he's going to be probably getting another one pretty soon. And I think that given the next class, he might either A, he's going to not do very well with them and we're going to kind of see him slip off, or B, he's just going to start looking for players that maybe fit the mold of what he's looking for better and kids that aren't going to quit, a la the Jalen Johnson situation.
Connor, that's a good point. You know, I'm sorry, really quick, Kedrick. I saw something on Twitter just today, John Rothstein of CBS Sports, really good basketball writer, put something out there that right now today, the AP top 10 teams, 50 starters, 40 of them were with their programs last year. And I think that speaks volumes right now with what we're seeing in college basketball, not just this year, but really the past several years. And when you think about it, the last one and done that made any kind of great impact was the Duke duo of Okafor and Jones that won the title over Wisconsin back in 2015. We haven't seen a one and done make that kind of impact since then.
Well, that's a good point. I got a question for you guys. You know, sitting here thinking about this, I've had this debate with a lot of people. Let me ask you, if Brad Underwood and Chris Holtmann had the same recruits that Coach K and Calipari had, would they be the same coach? I'm not saying that Coach K is not a great coach, but it is so much easier to win when you have that kind of talent. How good would Illinois be, or have been, or Ohio State, if they had that, or Wisconsin, if they had that kind of talent year in and year out? Is it the coaches that make the program, or is it the kids? Because we all think here, listening on this podcast, we think Brad Underwood's a good coach. He'd be a Hall of Fame coach too if he had that kind of talent. Bill Self's proven that because he's a great recruiter. He did well in Illinois, and I don't know. I mean, how good is he? But if you don't have talent, like these teams don't have it right now, they're at the bottom. Those three teams, those blue blood teams, they're at the bottom right now.
I think some of that goes to the same thing as when you're hiring. You know, when I used to hire sales reps, there was a certain type of individual I was looking for. I think some of that goes by, you know, you're not going to be great. I look at maybe to be a great coach, the ante that you got to pay to get into the game is to be a pretty good recruiter. Because if you don't have that talent, you know, you've got heart, you've got those type of players. That works sometimes, but generally speaking, if you get into a big game and you've got the team with more talent will generally win. And so I look at some of these great coaches as probably they also would be great salespeople because they can influence others and get them to come. But if you don't get the right kids to come, you're never going to be a great coach. So it's kind of a chicken and the egg type of thing. You need the talent. You need the coach to get them there. Maybe the coach is the Pied Piper. And I really feel like you can look exactly what you're talking about, Ked, because if you start saying, well, you know, Krzyzewski's won however many national titles he's won, but if you start looking at it and you say, well, he had the number one recruiting class 23 years out of the last 35, well, that isn't quite as good. And the most dominant coach of the last 20 years isn't Bill Belichick, it's Nick Saban. And he's won 6 or 7 titles in a shorter period of time down at Alabama. But I think he's had the number one recruiting class like 10 of the last 11 years. So now you start saying, well, maybe his expectations, maybe he should have won one more. I think there's a good debate to be had. Is it the players? Is it the coach? Is it the combination? But I will say that a guy, it would be very interesting to see a guy like Underwood with a high talent team, but he's also going to need the type of recruit who can get coached the way he likes to coach. I look at a player like Io, and I know it's not fair to say this about Io, but he reminds me of Jordan in the fact that he kind of refuses to lose. And every year he works and adds something to his game that he felt he was missing the year before. And that is something that a coach doesn't have anything to do with that. A coach just sets up an atmosphere where a player can do that. And Io has that internal fire that makes him want to spend his time in the off season working on his left hand when most kids are trying to figure out, you know, will I go in the first round or whatever they're working on. And I think attracting that type of player and understanding that is maybe what a coach should focus on more than anything else. Because if you get a talented player who has Io's drive, holy cow, you're going to be good.
I don't want to get off topic here, but I will tell you this. I don't know if you guys caught this the other night. When they played Northwestern, there was a rebound that Io and Kofi both got at the same time. And Io was not happy that he got it. He was happy that he didn't get it. I don't know if the average fan caught it because Kofi is a 58% free throw shooter and you have an 82% free throw shooter. And the way he went about it and the way he told Kofi, it was professional. And that's that leadership, those veteran kids that you have. Because if there was Andre Cabello, he wouldn't have told Io that. But that's that killer instinct and that drive and that mindset that he has. I want the ball in my hands. Let's play the odds and let's be smart about this. So I could tell by your gestures that you guys saw it. But I thought that was quite competitive from Io and it was impressive. I just don't – it's been really hard for me to sit here and just say, gosh – see the best player play the game in O-line. Because I think the best player, even if you ask a lot of the older guys, they'll tell you Nick Anderson. They will all say that. But I'm going to tell you, I may be pushing him. That dude is clutch, not just because they're winning. He is clutch, and he makes it look easy. I was sitting here when they played Nebraska, and I was frustrated. And he made it look so easy, and then he runs on the court and laughs. You can't teach that. And these NBA guys who are trying to find faults with him, they're going to pay the price when they miss on him. I really do think that. Sorry to get off topic, but that's a random thought.
I definitely want to come back to that, but I want to make sure I don't want to step on Connor's toes. Connor, did you have a thought? I don't want to dominate it too much.
Go ahead, Larry.
I'm going to get to Iowa in a minute. I want to go back to what you mentioned, Ken. Your question, it's a very good one. And Mike, you brought up Nick Saban. And ask yourself, why is Nick Saban so successful? Well, Nick runs a camp every year. He brings kids in, and it's a very successful camp. All the coaches do it. I mean, you know, whatever. But what Nick does is he finds out which kids are coachable, and those are the kids he offers. So if you're a knucklehead and you think you're Julio Jones as a sophomore in high school, he's you're not getting an offer from Alabama. You're not playing for him. And so it kind of goes back to the question of a great coach. And I think you've got to be careful. I'm not sure you can just say great, because I think, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Mike Krzyzewski as a person, but I have tremendous respect for him as a coach and what he's done. When you look at the coaches in terms of greatness or whatever, define great first. I think Thad Matta was a great coach at Ohio State, what he did at Butler and Xavier. And he's an Illinois guy. I remember when he was a corn jerker back in the 80s. We all have memories of him when Hoops and Eastland won the state title. But here's somebody, and look this up, make sure, check me on this, but I'm almost positive that during his time at Ohio State, when things were rolling really well, and he had the Conleys and the Odens and Daquan Cook from Dayton and so on and so forth, I'm almost positive he had 8 different starting point guards in 8 successive years. when you had that kind of changeover, you can only go so far. So who's to say if these kids don't stay 2 or 3 years, Ohio State's got a couple of titles. And so I think that that's tough, that would Underwood be a better coach? It's hard to say, because if you've got a system that takes time to learn, you're only going to go so far. If you get, and to your point, getting to Io, think about Io, what he was as a freshman and what Io is today. Yep. And there's a reason Illinois is number 5 in the country and on everybody's lips as a Final Four contender. And for the first time, a serious national, first time in a long time, national championship contender. And Kendrick is exactly what you talked about. I've been an Illinois fan for more than 40 years, and this is the first time, other than the 05 season, that if this team is down with 5 minutes to go, I'm not concerned. I don't think, oh no, here it comes. And a lot of that's because of Io, because Missouri, he didn't always happen through the shot up, the 3-point, but he learned from that. If you notice, he's never done that since. And that's what I mean. These kids don't stay in school long enough to learn those things, to learn how to, this guy beat me in the Elite Eight. He did this and this. Okay, next year when this happens, I'm not going to let that happen. And that's what we don't see too much. And I think that's why you get a team like at Illinois, or a Gonzaga or a Baylor. That's why I think that they're teams this year that really could win it all.
Oh, I'd agree with you 100% on all of that. I mean, there's not going to be a Nick Saban in college basketball just because the kids don't really fear getting pulled the way that Nick Saban can because of the power within the system. I mean, they know they only got to be there for 3 months during the season, 4 months. You're not there for 4 months with Nick Saban. You're there for potentially 36. You're going to have to really buy in for that long term. And that's why I think college basketball should adopt more of the baseball style rule where it's 2 years or you go pro directly out of high school. Because then you got, you know, the LeBrons, they can keep going to the NBA, the Zions, if you want to. The NBA teams, they're going to miss on enough guys that they're going to start going, maybe I do take the guy that's been in college for 2 years because they do have talent, but they've proven that they're going to work on their game. Coach K has kind of proven that he's had a couple of years here and there where you're going to have, you know, the Jason Tatum, the Jabari Parker, the Brandon Ingram, that you can have the talented guys. But if they had to be there for 2 years, they're going to be winning a whole lot more games.
And let's be honest about Mike Krzyzewski and his track record. Of all the 4 year guys he had, he only had one true NBA star, and it was Grant Hill. I mean, let's face it. I mean, this is not, you know, up until recently, and you're talking about, you know, Tatum and Brandon Ingram. Up until recently, the best player out of Duke was Elton Brand, was the best Duke player. This is not a guy who creates great NBA players, because his system doesn't do that, and that's fair. He's not here, you know, he's here to win NCAA championships. But I agree with you, and I agree with what Kendrick said earlier. NBA GMs, Io DeSumo is going to make a lot of guys look really stupid because they're going to go for the young kid with the potential. And it was funny, my son, who's a big college basketball fan, heard Jay Billis talk about, I forget what player it was, and he was saying how great he was. And the next sentence, he listed all of his weaknesses. And it was like, how is this guy with this many weaknesses your number one overall pick? But the NBA GMs are going to fall in love with the names they see on ESPN. And this guy we think is going to put people in seats. And so we're going to graft this guy. And a guy like Io is going to fall down to a decent playoff team. Like, I mean, can you imagine Io on the Warriors?
A lot of mock drafts have him there.
I've seen the same thing. They have him there because he will be a perfect guy who's a year older and will come in and wouldn't sit.
Yeah. He would come in and give you 15, 20 minutes a game. He'd be a spot starter for you. He can now hit threes. He can play defense. He's a leader. He's going to also take coaching. He's the kind of player. It's the reason why teams like the Warriors and the Spurs have dominated college basketball, or I'm sorry, the NBA over the last 20 years. If I'm a GM, there's only three players I would pick, three types of players. Players who are international, players who've gone to a small school, or players who stayed in school for more than 1 year. Otherwise, I'm not drafting you. I'll pick you up as a free agent 4 or 5 years down the line, because today that's not going to happen. I'm not going to pick a kid that I'm going to try to cajole as a 19-year-old and get to that point, and then you're going to want a max deal now that I have to give to you, but you can't get me to the second round of the playoffs. You know, there's only two guys who really, two guys in the NBA, two types of players who deserve max contracts. Ones who can win me championships, LeBron James, or ones guys who can put butts in the seats. And I use Tobias Harris as a great example. I go back to my wife. My wife has no idea who Tobias Harris is, and she's from Tennessee. She's a Tennessee fan. She has no idea who he is. So when Tobias Harris comes to town, are you going to say, oh my God, I got to go see Tobias Harris? No, he's not worth $36 million a year. But the way the system is set up, that's the pay that he gets because of that system. And to your point, a guy like Ayo, I see like a guy like Draymond Green. He's going to slip into somebody's hands and look out. And we're all going to say, yeah, we tried to tell you.
His measurables, they still list him at 6'5 on most of these sites. So I'm almost wondering maybe he is that low on there because they don't know that he's grown to 6'7. Other than maybe like, I'd say there's probably 5 to 6 prospects that I would probably take over him just because of upside. But they could fall into the trap of they're good enough to get you to the playoffs, but they're not good enough to lead you to a title. Whereas Ayo could be a guy that you get, he's going to be the last piece to a team that's just going to, he's going to take him over the edge.
That's a great point. Well, and let me just say one thing. And I see him almost like a Jarrett Culver of 2 years ago, where his stock, the deeper the team goes in March, his stock's going to rise to where Illinois, if they are a Final Four title game, national champion, he could fall into that top 10 range just because finally now people see on the big stage what he can do. Kendrick, I'm sorry, I may cut you off.
We're talking about the draft. I remember last year, I went to Champaign 4 or 5 times, and I'll tell you the team. I thought he was going to get drafted last year, and I'll tell you the team that I thought was going to pull the plug on him because I was just in the right spot at the right time. I overheard this guy. I don't even tell you. I don't know who the gentleman's name was, but I'll tell you who the team was. I heard him call. Iowa was just unbelievable at practice, and I went down there 4 or 5 times. This guy had been down there. It was the Indiana Pacers. They were in love with him. I mean, this guy was calling his people, and he was just saying, listen, this guy's a can't miss. And all he kept talking about was how long he was, his desire, and him being able to guard 3 positions. And he kept saying that. And then the 1 week he called, he talked about his shot looking better. I really thought, I just never said anything because I didn't want to be that guy. But, you know, if that would have happened last year, I would have just said it. I saw this coming because Indiana really, really liked him. You know, to your point, a team like Golden State will be good for him, but I just think the NBA right now is so fixated, which is why I'm not a fan. I have to draft this 18, 19-year-old kid. And the thing I don't like about it, Larry, you mentioned, you invest these time, you build these kids, and then when their contract's up, they're gone. You develop these kids, and they're gone.
It's too bad, and then therefore, this doesn't help the NBA game either. And I agree with what Connor said. I've liked the baseball model. That's been my favorite. It's not going to happen anytime soon. You know, I was at CNN, I used to talk to NBA guys about this, and they would say, we're not here to help the college game.
If I'm an NBA GM, I am begging my owner to go to that system because it takes me off the hook of having to decide if I'm going to put my livelihood in the hands of an 18-year-old that I drafted in the first round that we find out that, oh, you know what, he isn't coachable, or all the different things that you can find out. And my way of looking at it is, you know, if you get me the 2 years, now all of a sudden I can tell. I go back to the best 2 year pro or 2 year college player, Magic Johnson. You knew at the end of his second year when he went pro, you knew you were hitting the home run. Period. End of sentence. It was good. And if I get a superstar and he has 2 years to play and build a resume in college basketball, if I'm a GM, I'm not going to lose my job because it's a lot easier to take that pick than it is to hope, you know, is this Kevin Garnett or is this, and you put in the freshman or the straight from high school flop of your choice.
Leon Smith.
Yeah, exactly. So I tend to think I would be like, please, Mr. Owner, go to this owner's meeting and vote for the baseball model. GMs across the league will make a statue of you or something.
Well, I'll preface it on one thing. If it does go to the baseball model, you have to have some way for the kids to be making the money in school as well, so that they can not have the situation where it's not a good choice for them to go to college because your family needs money now. This way you would be able to balance that because GMs can still take the risk on the guys that are, you know, they believe are the top. Zion Williamson, he really doesn't have to go to college if that's the case. But are they really going to dive for the 15th to 20th best recruit in their class? I kind of doubt that. So this would just give them, you know, 2 years you develop, you buy into a system, you prove to the coaches if you aren't at that extraordinarily talented beyond belief. And Zion, people didn't even trust him going into college that he was going to be the number one because they just believed, oh, you play against 5'9" white guys in high school. And they it took them a year of Duke for them to really buy into that. There are going to be players that will be proven wrong, or they're going to be, you know, the Cliff Alexanders that you go and they just disappear.
Yeah, I totally agree. Connor, I agree.
So we're reaching a point here where we need to kind of wrap things up. And we've had a fun conversation. I'm glad that everybody could make it for this one. I'm just going to go around the horn and see if you have any closing thoughts. And since Connor's the youngest, we're going to make him go first. If there's anything that we've missed or anything you wanted to throw out there.
Hot take that I have is that of the blue blood coaches, I think Calipari is actually, at this point, he's kind of an enabler for this system to be the way that it is. And I don't think that he's really doing justice to a lot of the kids that are going through his program with his development. He's basically saying that he's here as like a G League type situation. And I mean, if you don't make his rotation in the first year, he doesn't really develop you to the point where you can be a playable player, which means if you're not good enough for the NBA after that year, transfer. Get out of Dodge. Go to a place where they are going to invest. That would be my hot take.
So there's a hot take that I did not know was coming. So that's good. That's good. Kedrick? What are your thoughts here as we kind of wrap things up?
Connor, my man, touche. That was well said. I like that. I guess my hot take is this. When we talk about the Duke and North Carolinas of the world, I don't think Coach K is going to get out of this one. I think he'll get some talent, but I don't think people are going to be as enamored with Duke as they once were. They're, like Larry mentioned, they were not putting a bunch of guys in the NBA. He has 5-star kids, but he doesn't have those dominant guys. And I think at some point, the teams who are traditionally good, like Michigan State or you know, Illinois now, or I guess, they're going to start getting their share of some of those kids. I don't think all those kids are just going to leave and run to Duke like they once have. For some reason, Coach K, I don't want to say he bailed on the kids, but when he talked about maybe canceling the season and not wanting to do the preseason schedule, he could have been telling the truth, but it was a bad look to me, like, hey, I'm not winning, so I'm going to take my ball and go home. You know, that may not be his intentions, but that's the way it came off to a lot of people. You know, and when I talk to recruits now, I don't know the last time I heard Duke mention, not that they're going to, you know, miss on all these kids, but I've heard Kentucky more than Kansas, and I want to have Duke. That's my hot take.
Yeah, Kendrick, I would agree with that. I don't know how I follow those up, either one of those. I agree with both you guys. I could take either one of those. You know, I think that what this tells me is that college basketball is slowly getting back to what's going to be a really fun wild, wild west. And I think the days of one or two programs dominating, that's kind of behind us right now. Because, I mean, when you look at, again, the past four or five Final Fours since Duke won in 2015, look at different teams you've had in there. Auburn had never been there before. Texas Tech, some people didn't know they played basketball. You know, this is an exciting time. You know, the Butlers back in a decade ago, VCU getting in and running the table. So I think what makes it exciting is that it's an opportunity for these other coaches that, yeah, you may not win those top kids, but I think if you're realistic with yourself and been in the game long enough, you know that going in. So you find those players that fit your system, which is what Izzo has done all these years. You know, he's a Hall of Fame coach because he always had that fifth-year senior center who was all Big Ten and killed you. I mean, he always had Cassius Winston who stayed and was, you know, player of the year. So I think what's exciting is, and it's an opportunity for Illinois, since we're on the eye of the Illini, that it's an opportunity for a team like that, a program like that, to build the right way, that it's going to create those kind of those new dynasties possibly. Krzyzewski is in his 70s. Roy Williams is older. Calipari is only 62. He's around. Self's around. But I think you've got those opportunities where you can prove to some kids that, look, you're not, you know, if you're a one and done, you want to be here, that's fine. But if you have dreams and you do want to go to the NBA, and of course you do, here are two guys right here, Io and Kofi. They stuck around. And by the way, next conversation, oh my God, if Kofi stays a third year, that's another conversation we can have. I mean, I just get excited thinking about it. But you're going to have those other programs that will be able to build onto that. I think Chris Beard at Texas Tech is doing that. You know, he gets the McClung kid to come down from Georgetown, and he was a Virginia legend on the level of Allen Iverson. He gets him to lead the Georgetown program. He's doing well down there. You're going to have those other situations. And so I think overall, the Blue Bloods struggling this year in the long run is good for college basketball. And we'll see if I'm right about that.
Yeah, and I'll do the final wrap up. I personally think that what I really want to see is I want to see Io have a fantastic run. lead Illini deep into the tournament, and I'm willing to let them win one more game than they won in 2004, 2005. I'm all for that. But I really think that seeing the success that Io's had by staying an extra year and then underlining the fact that he worked his butt off when he stayed that extra year, maybe that's the difference of Kofi going to the NBA and having a semi-okay career versus working with Antigua and putting together the skills that gives him a career that's really a dynamic one. Maybe he'd have a lot more pride looking back on when it's all said and done. I would love to see Kofi make that judgment to come back one more year, because I really think the Illini, that would put them back on the map and really get this program anchored in, especially to anchor it at a time that some of the Blue Bloods are aging or just struggling like Indiana is now, would be fantastic. So with that, I want to thank Kedrick Prince, the director of recruiting for the Illini guys. One of the reasons that you can get such great news here is because we have people like Kedrick who are out there. He knows the recruits. He's in their ears. He's talking to people, and the man never rests. I'm glad I don't have to see his cell phone bill, because he's always trying to figure out what's going on, and that is great. I want to thank Larry Smith, the Illini guy, one of the co-founders here. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us. Connor Kegley does the previews for us and is an amateur person who can analyze just about any basketball player on film or watch any basketball offense and defense on film and dissect it. And myself, Mike Kegley, I'm here just to try to keep everything on track and make sure we get a lot of good opinions. And remember, the last Illini guy, co-founder who's not here tonight, Brad Sturdy, is one of the premier basketball experts in the Midwest and certainly is behind Lauren Tate, the dean of Illini basketball coverage. So for Kedrick, Larry, Connor, and myself, thank you so much for listening, and thanks for keeping your eye on the Illini.
Remember to subscribe to theIlliniGuys.com, where you have a 7-day money-back guarantee. Those who subscribe annually by February 28th will be eligible for the drawing to win a free 3-night stay in a Maui resort. Don't forget to subscribe and look for all of our podcasts, like Sturdy for 30, Eye on the Illini, and Eye on the Lines from Illini Guys. You can also find My Illinois Players Show with co-host Marcus Liberty on the Fan Media Network. I'm Patrick Quinn. This has been a production of JM Talent Productions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.